Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, the escalating battle over the ballot box. Today, the Supreme Court heard one of the most important election cases in more than a decade. The issue, how much our legal system can intervene to ensure equal access to voting. This comes as Republican lawmakers around the country use Trump's false claim of a rigged election to push laws that would limit things like early voting and vote by mail. Experts worry these laws could impact turnout, especially among minorities. My guest, Ari Berman, is a senior reporter at Mother Jones and author of the book, Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. We spoke Tuesday afternoon, shortly after arguments at the Supreme Court ended. Ari, the Supreme Court this morning heard arguments on a case that really could have a major impact on voting in this country. Give us a general idea of what it's about and why it's so important.
Well, hi, Diane, and it's a pleasure to get to talk to you. The case concerns two restrictions on voting passed by Arizona's Republican-controlled legislature, a ban on ballot collection, so what Republicans call ballot harvesting, allowing someone who is not a close relative or family member to collect your ballot, and then a ban on out-of-precinct voting. So if you show up and you vote at the wrong polling place, your ballot will be thrown out in Arizona, even though your vote for statewide races would still theoretically be valid, because it doesn't matter where you cast your ballot for those races, theoretically. Now, these restrictions have been demonstrated to have a disparate impact on minority voters. Black, Latino, Native American voters were twice as likely to have their ballots thrown out for showing up at the wrong precinct because they either live far from the polls or their polling places move a lot or they're located in confusing places. And also, Latino and Native American voters in Arizona are more likely to rely on ballot collection because they live in rural areas where the mail service is not as reliable. So they need someone to drop their ballot off of them. But the significance of the case isn't really these two restrictions. It's what will the Supreme Court do about the remaining provision of the Voting Rights Act? Because remember, in 2013, the Supreme Court severely weakened the Voting Rights Act. And it said that those states with a long history of discrimination, they didn't have to approve their voting changes any longer with the federal government. So that was Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. But there's another section of the Voting Rights Act, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, that applies nationwide and allows you to challenge a discriminatory voting change or election system. So after getting rid of one part of the Voting Rights Act, the Supreme Court is now considering weakening the other key part of the Voting Rights Act. And if they were to do that, that would mean that there would be very little opportunity for voters of color to challenge discriminatory voting laws under the VRA because it would be practically nullified.
So the Democratic Party brought this case against the state of Arizona and the Arizona Republican Party. You were there, I gather, listening to the arguments. What did you take away?
I was there virtually, as everyone is now, listening to the Supreme Court, because they're meeting virtually, which is actually a lot more accessible for the public, because previously you had to get a press pass or be a very select member of the public to get into the Supreme Court. Now anyone can listen to these arguments. So I'm hoping that this is something they're just going to do when there's no longer a pandemic. I'm sure they won't because the Supreme Court doesn't prize accessibility. But I think it's great that any American can listen to these arguments. They don't have to stand online for 5 hours or be a member of the press corps to get in. It's always a little bit hard to know what the justices will do just from oral arguments because they don't always show their true colors. But I think two things were clear to me. Number one, they were somewhat to quite skeptical of the Republican Party's argument that we should severely weaken the Voting Rights Act to the point of basically getting rid of Section 2 of the law. However, they were also very skeptical of the Arizona Democratic Party's argument that we should reinstate ballot collection and reinstate out-of-precinct voting. Because as John Roberts said, there is credible threat of fraud, at least with regards to ballot collection. So it's possible they could split the difference. They could uphold the restrictions on voting in Arizona, which Democrats won't like, but they will not go so far as the Republicans want to basically neuter the Voting Rights Act. Now, what I think they will do, not just in this case, but more broadly, is to just severely weaken the Voting Rights Act without actually saying that they're doing so. Meaning, they will just uphold new restrictions on voting, but they don't have to actually throw out the law to do it. They just have to interpret it in the most restrictive way possible so that they don't really have any problem with whether it's new voter ID laws or cutbacks on early voting or purging of the voting rolls, those kind of things. I mean, the Supreme Court hasn't struck those things down in the past when it was a 5-4 court. So I can't imagine they're going to really try to strike these things down when it's now a 6-3 court that's moved even further to the right.
So at the same time, we learned that over the objections of Democrats, the Georgia House Republicans passed a sweeping elections bill that would enact more restrictions on absentee voting and cut back on weekend early voting hours. So this issue of voting rights is not only going on in the Supreme Court, it's going on in states around the country.
That's absolutely right. We're seeing the most concerted push to roll back voting rights in decades. And it's a direct result of all the lies that Donald Trump told about the election. And I always knew this was going to be the fallout of what Trump was saying. And I knew that the reason why so many Republicans refused to criticize him was not just because they were scared of him or his followers, but because they knew that this would be useful to them at some point, that they could then point to Trump's lies and say, even if we don't agree with them, so many of our voters now believe them, and they don't have confidence in the election system that we have to do something about it. Leave aside the fact that the only reason the voters lack confidence is because their leaders lied to them over and over and over. And if they had just told the truth, if Donald Trump had just told the truth, like every other president who lost an election had done, then we wouldn't be in the position we're in today. But I mean, so quickly after the election, we've seen such a concerted push to restrict voting rights. Over 250 restrictions on voting rights introduced in 43 states in a 2-month period, according to the Brennan Center for Justice. That's magnitudes greater than restrictions on voting that we've seen in the past. And I've covered this for a decade now, so I've seen these restrictions on voting. This is not the first time we have seen these kind of efforts, but it's an acceleration of the efforts. And the interesting thing to me about what they're doing in Georgia, for example, is they're trying to make it harder to vote by mail, which is what Trump complains about. But then they're also trying to make it hard to vote in person by cutting back on early voting, for example. So then you're saying, well, this really can't be about election integrity, because if we're worried about mail voting, then wouldn't we want to make in-person voting more convenient? But we're also making that more difficult too. And so then you start to think about, is the whole goal here just to make it so difficult that groups that were historically marginalized or disenfranchised or new to the political process, they just decide to not turn out? And I think that's clearly what the Republican Party wants to accomplish in Georgia and other states.
And what about the Electoral College? Aren't there some efforts to change how that operates?
Yeah, there's efforts to try to change how that operates too. These are a little bit more fringe at this point, but we'll see whether they enter the mainstream. But in Arizona, for example, Republicans introduced a bill that would allow the state legislature to appoint its own electors anytime after the election for any reason, which would basically just render the presidential election completely null and void. And that, of course, was the exact thing that Donald Trump wanted them to do after November. And state legislatures controlled by Republicans refused to do this because it was illegal. And so Arizona Republicans have now introduced another proposal saying that they want to pass this, but then have the voters approve it as an initiative. Now, why the voters would approve something that takes away the power of their vote, I have no idea why they would do that, but they're still talking about trying to push this forward. Another thing that's been discussed in states like Wisconsin, and again, this is still a fringe idea, I don't necessarily think it's going to pass, but it's being talked about, is trying to allocate the Electoral College in states based on congressional districts. Of course, Republicans drew all of these congressional districts because they controlled the redistricting process in places like Wisconsin. That means that instead of Joe Biden winning the state of Wisconsin, he might get 5 electoral votes instead of whatever the number is, 11, 12, 13. And so that's another way to try to limit the ability of Democrats to win the Electoral College, which, by the way, the Electoral College, as you know, already severely favors Republicans because Donald Trump lost the popular vote by 7 million votes, but came within 45,000 votes in 3 states from winning the Electoral College again.
And with the gerrymandering that's going on in light of the census, isn't that going to get even worse?
Yeah, that's the next shoe to drop. This has been delayed a little bit because the census itself has been delayed, both because of the pandemic and then all sorts of efforts by the Trump administration to screw around with it, which then led the Census Bureau to have to do all these analyses on anomalies in the data. So the census is taking longer to complete, meaning redistricting is going to take place longer. But I think there's a step-by-step process that they're taking here to try to entrench their own power. First, they're changing the voting laws to try to make it harder for Democrats to vote. Then they are going to gerrymander, which will be even more effective at protecting their own power, because then they can literally choose their own voters. I mean, with voting laws, you never quite know, because Democrats, for example, didn't use mail-in voting all that much until 2020. So theoretically, they could just choose to use a different voting method. But when you draw a district, that's the district. It might change a little bit because of demographic changes, but what we saw after 2010 is Republicans drew the districts in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Michigan, all these states. A decade later, they're in control still of all of those states, even though those states voted for Joe Biden, even though those states elected Democratic governors. But somehow, either the state legislature was so much more popular than all of those other Republicans who ran, or more likely, they drew the districts in such a way that it didn't matter who won the statewide vote. It just mattered who won those specific districts.
What about the effort in Georgia that calls for overhauling runoff elections?
Yeah, that's another thing that has come down the pike. And clearly what happened was Democrats won the runoffs in January. And so Republicans in Georgia have called for really changing the rules of the runoff. They want to shrink the runoffs from 9 weeks to 4 weeks. That would leave only about 5 days of early voting because of how quickly the elections would take place. They don't want to allow any new voters to register who, for example, moved to the state after November and are eligible to vote. So this really seems to, there seems to be no reason to do this other than wanting to prevent Democrats from winning these runoff elections. Now, I don't particularly like runoffs to begin with, so I think you could get into an argument about whether or not you need them.
Why not? Why don't you?
I don't like them because I think they're, first off, there's no real reason why you need them to begin with. I mean, many other states allow someone to win without getting a pure majority of the vote. So number one, I don't think they're really necessary. Number two, what happens is usually the runoffs take place after the election and many fewer people are paying attention. And usually the turnout is much lower in them. Now that didn't happen in January, but I mean, I could see a debate over whether or not to get rid of runoffs. I could see a good faith debate taking place over whether or not to get rid of them because most other states don't do it this way. But to say we're going to keep them, but then make it so much harder to vote and organize in them, that doesn't make any sense because these are already low turnout elections. And then you're saying, well, you only have 4 weeks to mobilize a campaign and get people back to the polls. That's not a lot of time at all for campaigns that are trying to win an election.
And you're saying that most of this is coming about because Republicans are going along with Trump's belief that this was a rigged, unfair, untrue election.
I think most of them are opportunistically weaponizing what Trump is saying. I don't think most Republicans in the Georgia legislature believe that Donald Trump, that the election was stolen. I haven't taken a scientific poll. I don't know. Some of them clearly do agree with him, but I think a number of them don't agree with him. But I think they are disturbed about the fact that Democrats won the state in November and won the runoffs in January. They are disturbed about the fact that Black voters and voters of color are becoming a larger part of Georgia's electorate. It was really striking to me when I watched the entire debate in the Georgia House, and almost all the Democrats arguing against the bill were women and people of color, and almost all the Republicans arguing for the bill were white men. And so it's just a really stark divide in Georgia when it comes to race. And, you know, you can't help but think about the debates that took place in states like Georgia in the 1950s and 1960s, when people sought to rationalize literacy tests and poll taxes. Remember, there were arguments for those things, too. It wasn't like they just said, we just want to disenfranchise African Americans. I mean, they did say that, but they also said, we want to prevent illiterates from voting, or we want to create an educated electorate, or we want to crack down on voter fraud. There were many rationales for Jim Crow restrictions as well, just like there's rationales for getting rid of Sunday voting and things like that. I mean, but the fact is, the Georgia Secretary of State, a Republican, said over and over the election was secure. He said over and over the system worked. And so if the election was secure and the system worked, why would you change it? And every single press release from the Secretary of State's office brags that Georgia is a nationwide leader in elections, that it has early voting, it has no excuse absentee voting, and it has in-person voting and automatic voter registration. And now Republicans are trying to get rid of all of those things except for in-person voting. They're trying to get rid of automatic registration. They're trying to get rid of no excuse absentee voting. They're trying to cut early voting. And so, I mean, the Republican Party essentially is going against what the Republican official who runs elections in the state is saying they should do.
So depending on how the Supreme Court rules in the Arizona case, I would think you could see the Georgia case going before the Supreme Court as well.
I think you could. And honestly, I'm not very confident in efforts to fight these cases before the courts, because Donald Trump named 234 judges to the courts, three to the Supreme Court and 231 to the lower courts. And I think these judges are either going to just flat out agree with these restrictions on voting, because many of them were people like state attorney generals or state officials that in the past helped write these kind of laws or defend them. Or I think they will just say the states can do what they want when they run elections, absent some sort of really major change. Now, I think it's going to be really fascinating how Georgia defends getting rid of no excuse absentee voting when they are the ones that wrote that provision and used it for so many years and only had a problem with it when Democrats started using it. I think with early voting, for example, I could see them saying, yeah, we got rid of Sunday voting. That's inconvenient, but we still have more than 2 weeks of early voting, so people can just vote on different days. I mean, I could see that argument. I don't agree with it, but I could see it. But you're talking about no excuse absentee voting, getting rid of that. You can only vote by mail now if this law passes, if you're over 65 or if you're out of town or if you have another strict exception, meaning that a lot of people just aren't going to be able to vote by mail at all. And that's going to be a hard case, because I don't know of a single state that expanded mail voting and then repealed it in such a way. I know states that haven't expanded mail voting for one reason or another, but I don't know of a single state that expanded it and then rolled it back in such a way.
More of my conversation with Ari Berman when we come back.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Here's the rest of my conversation with Ari Berman, senior reporter at Mother Jones and author of the book titled Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Ari, people listening to you, as I am, might begin saying to themselves, well, voting really is going to be rigged across the country. Why bother?
Well, the fact that they are trying to restrict voting so much, to me, is indicative of how valuable voting actually is, because why would they be undertaking such an effort to restrict it if it didn't actually matter? And I think this will become a rallying cry for Democrats and voters of color in the states where this passes. And I think in Georgia, the governor, Brian Kemp, is very aware of this. He knows that if he signs some of these measures, Stacey Abrams, who's probably going to run for governor again for 2 years, is going to talk about how he doesn't want black voters and voters of color and moderate whites to be able to vote. So I'm not totally sure that the Republican Party knows how this is going to play out. I think a lot more people are paying attention to what they're doing now because of the things that Donald Trump said and because of the record turnout in 2020. A lot of times voter suppression is most effective when you don't know about it, when you show up at the polls and you're no longer registered to vote, or your polling place is mysteriously changed without any notice. Those are the kind of things that really leads to big confusion. Changing laws 2 years before an election and giving a lot of people enough time to mobilize against it, that to me is sort of an open question of what impact it will have. Now, I don't think it justifies it. I don't think that Stacey Abrams and other people should have to spend 2 years fighting for a law that many people were using beforehand. But I'm also wondering if there's going to be some collateral damage here. 1.3 million people in Georgia voted by mail in the last election, and that included 450,000 Republicans. So that's an awful lot of Republicans that you're now saying you can't vote by mail anymore. Now, some of their voters are carved out. For example, it allows people over 65 to vote by mail. That is a much more Republican demographic in Georgia. But still, I mean, there's a lot of Republicans that are 64 years old in Georgia that might like to vote by mail, that voted by mail in the past, had no problem using it until Donald Trump said it was a rigged method of voting. And so I think there's some collateral damage here. And I also just sort of wonder about their basic argument that they need to restrict voting, because you look at early voting, for example, they're trying to cut back on early voting. Well, January 5th, the runoff election, was the first time Democrats outnumbered Republicans in early voting in Georgia history, meaning that Republicans voted early more than Democrats in every single previous election. So like, they lost early voting in one election and they think they can never win it again. I mean, it just shows you how little faith they have in their ability to compete in elections, that they lose one election, they lose two elections, and suddenly they're changing all the voting methods in the state that they wrote and defended and used in large numbers.
But it's not just Georgia. You said earlier that there are nearly 250 laws around the country to try to change voting rules. Are most of those concentrated in areas where Joe Biden won?
A lot of them are. You look at Arizona is another state where a lot of these restrictions are being passed, where they're trying to make it harder for people to automatically receive a mail ballot. This is a state where 80% of people vote by mail. So they're trying to make it harder to receive a mail ballot. They're trying to add more rules for mail voting. As I said, the legislature is just trying to override the will of the voters altogether. They might try to cut back on in-person voting as well, like Georgia did. There's been proposals there to get rid of things like automatic registration, or to get rid of things like cut the number of polling places. So we don't know, but I think the efforts are most intense in places where Joe Biden won narrowly, because that's where they think that they can have the biggest impact. But I think what's also really fascinating is a lot of these restrictions are passing in places that Trump won. Like in Iowa, where Trump won by 8 points, they cut early voting, they changed the rules to mail voting. And Iowa was a state that had record turnout and Republicans did really well. They won every race. So, I mean, that was a case study that actually higher turnout benefited them. So there was no need to change the laws in Iowa.
Iowa has a pretty white population.
Yeah, well, that's another reason not really to change it, because there's not really a whole lot of threat of black voters turning out in large numbers when they're, 2 to 3% of the electorate. I mean, they're not swinging races except in a handful of cities where black voters make up a large population in Iowa. And so it's a strange argument they're making. The most extreme thing I've seen is in states like Idaho and Wyoming, they're passing laws, for example, to make it harder to collect ballots. And like, there is no chance that a Democrat would get elected to any major office in these states. And not only that, but these are extremely rural states where Republicans would routinely say, I'm going to give my ballot to my niece or my friend to drop off at the polls because I live 25 miles over a mountain from the nearest polling place. And so the fact that Republicans are doing this, not just in Georgia or Arizona, but in Idaho and Wyoming, just to me shows how much this big lie has infected the Republican Party. And it's almost like voter suppression is now a new litmus test for Republicans, that you're not a loyal Republican unless you want to make it harder to vote, in the same way that you're not a loyal Republican unless you're really pro-guns or really anti-abortion. Like, that's my biggest concern here, is that the debate over ballot access is becoming so politicized that even if Republicans don't want to support these kind of things, they have no choice because all of the energy in their party is towards restricting voting right now.
Let me ask you about collecting ballots. Is it now done in a more organized fashion to make sure that more people vote?
Yeah, I mean, one thing about ballot collection is the parties, for example, will do it because that's an effective way to get people to be able to vote in larger numbers. It hasn't really been a Republican thing. It hasn't been really a Democratic thing. There has been, you know, every once in a while, there's a scandal. We saw what Republicans in North Carolina did with ballot collection in 2018, where they kind of were forging signatures. But again, it was caught because there are safeguards in place. People always say, well, If you commit voter fraud, how would you know? And what I always say is, whenever it's done in large enough numbers to swing an election, they always find out about it, because it's obvious that there are anomalies, that somehow everyone has the same signature on lots of different ballots and things like that. And so it's not to say that fraud never exists, but it certainly doesn't happen to the level of degree that it was alleged in the last election. And there were so many recounts and so many audits and things like that that proved that out. In Georgia, they took one county and they did a random statistical analysis of mail ballots, and they looked at 15,000 ballots in Cobb County, Georgia. They only found two mismatched signatures out of 15,000 ballots, and that was a wife who signed her husband's ballot. And there was zero cases of fraud that resulted from it. I mean, so the system is pretty secure. And I mean, that's the most interesting thing here is that, remember, before he was fired, the kind of lead cybersecurity guy, Chris Krebs, for the government said this was the most secure election in American history. And we had the highest turnout in 100 years. So you'd think that if anything, we should have just kept the system and done nothing, or maybe expanded it to have greater turnout. But clearly, what we shouldn't have done is what we're doing right now, which is cutting back on all of these options that people use. And also, this is going to make the system run in a much more confusing way, because election officials in Georgia are going to be completely scrambling, for example, in 2022 to implement all of these different changes, because it's so confusing what the laws are right now.
So are you saying you're thinking that Republicans have made a mistake trying to move in that direction?
I don't know if they've made a political mistake. We'll see what the impact will be, but I think they've clearly made a moral mistake, and I think they might be making a political mistake, and they're also just going to be making a mistake in terms of making elections less accessible for a lot of different type of voters. And also, they're really increasing the risk that there actually could be the kind of election meltdown that so many of us were worried about in 2020 that didn't actually occur. Because when you start taking away multiple methods of voting, you start taking away voting by mail, but then you start cutting back on early voting, that's going to lead to more voter confusion. That's going to lead to longer lines. That's going to lead to more ballots being thrown out or more people not showing up. And so the net effect here is that it's very likely we could see lower turnout and more voting problems as a result of these changes, if they all pass and if they all stand up in court or otherwise.
So are you and I and a great many other people in this country know that the election was not rigged? It was sound, it was fair, but let's say we did have issues with fraud. Would any of these changes alleviate that?
Not many of them. The biggest change I would make, and there has been some bipartisan agreement on that, would be to allow counties to start processing mail ballots before the election, so that we would not have the kind of situation where the results shift or take days to be released. That to me is a problem. And I think it's a problem to perception. I think a lot of people lost faith in the system because they were fed all these conspiracy theories. But the reason they believe the conspiracy theories is because there was an opening where it was uncertain how the process was playing out. And so I don't think it's healthy for democracy for it to take a week to count ballots in places like Pennsylvania. And it allowed a lot of conspiracy theories to flourish. And I think if there was one change that could be made on a bipartisan basis, it would have been that change, which is let's make sure that these ballots can be processed so we can get results in a timely manner so that no matter who wins the election, they can trust that the process was fair. To me, that would be the number one change I would have made after the election. And there's been some discussion about it, but certainly, I would not have repealed no-excuse absentee voting when Americans voted by mail in the highest numbers ever. I would not have cut early voting when 70 to 80% of the public support it. I would not have made it easier to throw out ballots when so many people were concerned their ballots were going to be thrown out already in 2020. I would not have gotten rid of mail ballot drop boxes when people are still concerned about the ability of the post office to deliver mail on time. That's gotten worse, not better, since the election. So many of these changes, I would not have made, but I think election experts who look at what works on an empirical basis would not have recommended these changes either.
Ari, what's happening at the federal level? You've got some acts proposed, for example, the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. What are they designed to do, and how do they conflict with what is going before the courts?
Yeah, these are two really important pieces of federal legislation. The For the People Act would set basically national standards for federal elections. And they would say that Congress has the power to set the rules for federal elections so that for Congress, for the presidency, for whatever federal races there are, there would have to be automatic voter registration in every state, election day registration in every state, early voting in every state, expanded vote by mail in every state, that these would be federal requirements and basically federal protections, which is the idea behind it is that your vote shouldn't be dependent on the state where you live, that the right to vote should not be so dramatically different whether you live in Texas or Oregon, Oregon being a state where everyone is automatically mailed a mail ballot and automatically registered to vote, and Texas being a state where it's very hard to register to vote, very hard to vote by mail. And so it sets federal rules, and that would mean that if states are doing things like cutting early voting or rolling back mail voting, they could maybe do that for state races, but they would not be able to do that for federal races. And more than likely, those federal laws would be adopted on a statewide basis as well. Of course, it's going to be challenged in court, so who knows what will actually happen, but that's the idea behind it. The John Lewis Voting Rights Act would restore the part of the Voting Rights Act that the Supreme Court struck down, namely the requirement that states with a history of discrimination have to approve their voting changes with the federal government. The Supreme Court said in the 2013 Shelby County versus Holder decision, Congress can write a more modern Voting Rights Act. What the court really didn't like was that the data of the Voting Rights Act was based in the 1960s and early 1970s. They said this has to be based on a more modern formula. And so this is what it does. It requires states that have a more recent history of discrimination, who by and large are the same states that had a long history of discrimination, because there's patterns here. So it would still cover the Georgias and the Alabamas of the world. They would once again have to approve their voting changes in the federal government. So that would stop voting discrimination in the places where it occurs most historically. And it's kind of a carrots and sticks approach. The HR 1 is the carrot, basically says, we think you should adopt good laws. And the John Lewis Voting Rights Act is the stick to basically say, we're not going to allow you to pass bad laws in states where you've done it for a very long time. So this wouldn't completely alleviate voter suppression, but it would give the government far more tools to fight it, and it would create a far more expansive list of election reforms for federal races. And I think this is something that's long overdue.
So, final question. You've got such strongly opposing stances by Republicans and Democrats on the voting issue. Do you see any chance for common ground. For example, what's happening in Kentucky?
Yeah, I see some chance for common ground. You're right. In Kentucky, they had a bipartisan election bill, and I think there's a lot of things that people agree with. And honestly, if you had asked me 2 years ago, there was pretty strong bipartisan agreement in Georgia for things like early voting and mail voting. So it's only recently as these things have become politicized. If Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party and the Republican Party is defending insurrectionists and courting white supremacists, do I think we're going to have a lot of bipartisan agreement on elections? No, I don't. If that's how if the Republican Party is the party of white nationalists and anti-democratic reactionaries, then no, we're not going to have any sort of bipartisan agreement on elections in most places. If the Republican Party is not that party, if it's a different kind of party, a party that believes that it can win the votes of voters of color, it can win the votes of young people, a party that believes that it shouldn't associate itself with white nationalists or people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, then I think there could be bipartisan agreement. But I don't think you can really separate the debate over election issues from these broader debates that are going on about what is the Republican Party becoming, how it's radicalizing against democracy, and how Donald Trump has corrupted it in so many ways. And so I think it's really important to look at the debate over voting in the context of this broader debate over national politics. And that's something that is really unsettled at this very moment.
I said that was the last question, but Donald Trump has a number of legal charges being brought against him, including New York with his taxes and Georgia with how he tried to influence the Secretary of State. Depending on how those play out, do you think Donald Trump could lose some of that influence with his current supporters?
Probably not, because if he didn't lose influence after inciting an insurrection that nearly got members of Congress killed, it's hard to imagine how he would lose influence. They're just going to say that this is a rigged witch hunt, just like they said about all of the other investigations. So I don't think that it's going to change how many of his supporters feel about him, but I think it's going to damage his reputation. And I think it's already clear that a significant percentage of Americans have already further soured on his behavior, and that he's nowhere near the level of support that Joe Biden has. I mean, when Donald Trump left as president, his approval ratings were in the high 30s, low 40s, and Joe Biden's approval rating is in the 60s right now. And so I don't think they're anywhere near equivalent political figures right now, but I think that Donald Trump's grip on the base of the Republican Party is as tight as it ever was. That's where the momentum are. Those are the people that are telling state legislators they need to restrict voting. Not because they believe in restricting voting, because they don't want Democrats to win elections. They don't believe that Democratic victories are legitimate at all. And they see Democrats not as political opponents, but as political enemies. And actually, the polling bears this out. And that's why I'm saying there's this broader radicalization against democracy. There's this broader radicalization against the law writ large that's occurring within the Republican Party that Trump is the biggest manifestation of, but not the exclusive manifestation of. And until that is somehow controlled, I don't think you can really extricate debates about voting or really any other issue from that. But I do think it's interesting that at the same time Georgia Republicans are trying to make it harder to vote, Trump is under investigation and could soon be under criminal investigation for trying to throw out the results of the election there. I mean, it's kind of hard to ignore the lengths that he went to try to overturn the election, the fact that those lengths have now been manifested in another ostensibly more legal form.
Ari, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Diane. It was great to talk to you.
That was Ari Berman, a senior reporter at Mother Jones and author of the book Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. And that's all for today. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music was composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Before we close, I want to pay special tribute to a man who helped move forward rights for all in this country, Vernon Jordan. He died today. He was 85. Thanks for listening, all. Be well. Stay safe. I'm Diane Rehm.